I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. We're going to have Jim Polzin from the State Journal on later, as well as Badgers safety Joe Ferguson. But I got to plug a couple things first now that we're back to our regular weekly season schedule. Now we're back in the swing of things after the Badgers beat Utah State on Friday. We're going to have podcasts every Wednesday, so be looking out for that. Of course, the best way to get those is to subscribe to it on iTunes. And, you know, they'll also be posted on Madison.com, and I'll be tweeting those out as well. But just look for it every Wednesday during the season. I'm also going to have my film room story that I know – you know, a lot of people enjoy reading, and you know, those are going to come out every Tuesday. I posted one yesterday talking about, you know, the fact that you shouldn't really panic about Wisconsin's slow start against Utah State, and going over also games, you know, Chris Orr's first game back, and, you know, Chris James's role this year. And we talk about a few other things as well. I also have a weekly mailbag column like I did last season. That'll come out on Fridays. Anytime throughout the week, you can tweet at Jason_Galloway to send me questions for that. And, of course, I'll be doing live chats as well on Monday after Wisconsin's weekly press conference. And then on Saturdays after the game, I'll jump on Twitter. It's not going to be on Facebook Live this year. They're on Twitter. You can just go straight to my Twitter feed and find it. And I'll give some post-game thoughts after each game as well. So I just wanted everyone to know kind of what we're doing this season. It's pretty much the same as last season, if you followed our coverage. So hopefully you guys will keep tuning into the Red Zone and read our other coverage as well. But let's go get Jim.
We now welcome our very own Jim Polzin to the Red Zone podcast. How you doing, Jim?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing good. It's good to have you. Good to have you back on. You are the person who named this podcast, so I guess we should have you on every once in a while.
I'm still waiting for those royalty checks to roll in.
But... I'm still waiting for any checks to roll in. So the Badgers have played their first game. It was a long wait, and now we've actually seen, you know, what they can do when they're actually out there on the field against an opponent. And, you know, obviously it was a slow start. And I feel like, you know, when you go back and look at it, it was really maybe three or four drives that the offense looked really terrible, and then they started dominating up front. Do you get the sense that, you know, that team we saw in the first half isn't really indicative of what we'll see the rest of the year? Do you think that second half team is really the real Wisconsin?
Probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, yeah. Maybe closer to the second half team. I mean, I just thought everything that could go wrong in the first quarter or quarter and a half did. I mean, the field position was terrible. Nick Nelson fielded a punt inside of his 10, and then there was a penalty on that play. There was another penalty. Obviously, the fumble. It took a while, I think, to get going. And maybe that shouldn't have been so much of a surprise. A, it's an opener, and you never know in openers how rusty or out of sorts teams are going to be. I think the tailback rotation probably is going to take some time to sort out, and it's tough if those guys are in for a series or two, and, you know, how do you develop any rhythm? And then, you know, offensive line got a little bit jumbled around in the offseason, and, you know, you had a guy making his first career start at center. You had Dieter moving to the left tackle, you know, his first career start at left tackle. So I don't know. You try not to overreact to small sample sizes, and I thought after they got going and realized they could just you know, pound the ball down Utah State's throat and then open up some things in play action, it clearly was a much different team.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just the fact that the offensive line had a few kinks to work out, and you know, they, you know, obviously, like you said, a new center starting his first game is a pretty big deal. He's the one making, you know, most of the calls out there, and I think that he took, you know, a few series to settle in before they started going. I think it's probably, you know, I said on Friday, I think it's probably a good thing they didn't start with Alabama or LSU this year, because a start like that could have not been something they could come back from. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Hornibrook's performance, because you know, I thought he played really well in the game, but there's a lot on the Twitter sphere about you know, comparing him to Joel Stavi and that he, you know, his arm's not strong enough and things like that. What were kind of your, what did you see from Hornibrook, and you know, I guess the first time you've seen him since last year, what does he look improved to you? It's only one game, but did he at least look like you know, better than some people on Twitter think he is?
Probably. I mean, I don't know what people expect, to tell the truth. You know, he's not a guy that's going to blow you away with his arm, right? I mean, he's not a guy that zings passes. He's more of a touch passer, and for the most part, I thought all of his throws ended up where they were supposed to be. Excuse me. He had the three drop. At one point it was 1 of 4, and the three incompletions were all drops. So, you know, I thought he put the ball on the money for the most part. Again, he's not gonna blow you away with his arm skills and arm speed. I just think he's more of a finesse passer, and that's, you kind of gotta live with that. He's not, you know, I saw another person complaining, well, he's not a runner. Well, again, we knew that. You know, this is not.
It's not gonna suddenly get faster.
Right. He's not. You know, he worked hard in the off season to change his body a little bit, but that's not gonna make him the next Russell Wilson. And so you kind of just have to live with who he is. And I think there's a lot to like about him. He's a smart guy. I think the thing that Paul Christ and the staff like most about him is that he's just even keel. Just does not. He walks into the locker room after a game, or into the media room after a game, and you really don't know whether they've won a game 59-10 or lost it 59-10, because he just kind of keeps in that same cool demeanor. And so I think that's a huge plus for a quarterback. And he's a guy I think they can count on. So I thought, all things considered, first game of the season, I thought he was really good. And he's, you know, is he going to have to be better in games like Michigan and at BYU and at Nebraska? Yes, but I thought, you know, first impressions were very positive.
Yeah, I don't really get the idea that a quarterback has to be mobile. Well, I mean, it's better if he is.
Russell Wilson just spoiled so many people here. It's just because he could do it all. I mean, Russell could run. He could keep drives alive with his feet. He could throw on the run. He was a very precise passer. He had a strong arm, NFL arm. Clearly, this guy's gone and won a Super Bowl in the NFL. So I don't know if it's just comparing every guy since then to him. It's just such a high bar to reach, and it's, you know, but again, look at the bottom line, and this was the same with Stave, and we can get into a whole discussion on this. Win-loss record is not the only way you can judge a quarterback, but it's an important factor, and both those guys are winners. Joel Stave's a winner, Alex Hornibrook's a winner, and are they going to win games by themselves? Is Alex Hornibrook ever going to be a Heisman contender? No, but he's going to help this team win a lot of games just by being solid, and that's, I think that's the best word to describe him, solid.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah. I wasn't here during the Russell Wilson days. I'm guessing he was a little more than solid, but
he just was. Yeah, I mean, you could tell. I still remember that. I remember his debut, which was also a night game, if I remember correctly, and you know, we had seen him in camp and he looked really, really good, but then he got out there that first game and it was like, wow. I mean, the just everything about him, how he threw the ball, what he could do with his feet was just unreal. And it's like, wow, you know, you've got a really special, they've had some good quarterbacks here that have won a lot of games, but Russell Wilson from the get-go was clearly like, wow, this kid's special. And it's hard to find those guys, you know. This is not Alabama, this is not Florida State. It's hard to find blue chip type quarterbacks. You gotta develop them, and I think Alex Hornibrook's only a sophomore. I think he's well on his way to having a really good career. Although, you know, and I didn't see a ton of fall camp, so I didn't get to see the whole Jack Cohn experience. But I think they're really high on him too, and clearly the fact that they're playing him this year, you know, was a big deal.
Yeah, I do think they're high on Cohn. I don't think he's ready at all, and I think that's a lot of reason why they want to get him in some of these early games. You know, I think some people might say, you know, I kind of expected him to redshirt unless they really needed him, but it kind of makes sense when you look at their situation and you think, well, this, we got to get this guy as ready as possible.
Right. I mean, because this, I think everybody kind of feels there that this is going to be the potential for a special season, and you don't want to you don't want to run the risk of not having a quality backup ready in case something happens to Hornibrook. And I thought, you know, at the press conference earlier today, one of the things that Paul Chris pointed out was that on Jack Cohn's very first play, he didn't motion. He didn't set up one of those guys into motion, which was, you know, like, I didn't notice that because we were busy writing and we were in a terrible deadline and it was the fourth quarter. But those are the things that you work out in the first game. You just, you know, he's probably run that play dozens of times in training camp, but it was different the other night. The lights were on. It's his first game. He's probably a little nervous, and he forgot to do a very basic part of that play. And so, you know what? You live, you learn, and you move on.
And you want him to forget to motion a guy when you're up 45-10 against Utah State rather than coming into a game against Michigan tied
or
something.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, just from your first impressions of the defense this season, do you think they can be as good as they were last year? They don't have, you know, the depth they had at linebacker before the Sid Sheinbaum injuries, and Jamerson's playing safety now. Nick Nelson's replacing Shelton. But what'd you kind of see from them on Friday?
Yeah, I thought, you know, again, I think they look really good for three quarters. The first quarter was, in talking to those guys after the game, it was just adjusting to Utah State's tempo, and it was hard to get calls in from the sideline and then get those calls communicated to everybody in the group. So I think it just, there's a little bit of a, kind of a learning throughout the first quarter, and then they were put, the Hornibrook fumble put the defense in a really bad spot, and they couldn't, they gave them a touchdown. But after that, it was lights out, and so it's hard. I want to see them against, you know, more quality opponents. I don't know that I sit here and I say there's no way they can be as special as they were last year, because you've got, you know, you're talking an NFL first round draft pick and TJ Watt that they lost, Vince Beagle they lost, and then the Sitchie injury, in addition to other, you know, key guys. And I don't know how they could be that good. And yet, I do think they're going to be solid. I mean, they have a lot of guys back that have played a lot of football in their careers. I think Nick Nelson, the addition of him at cornerback is, from everything I've heard, they think he's going to be really special. So I don't see a weakness necessarily on this defense. The only thing that stands out is you've lost some pretty good playmakers, and who steps up. The other night, I thought T.J. Edwards just was all over the place. And so maybe that's a guy that all of a sudden, you know, he's been a really good player since he's arrived here, but maybe that's the next step for him is to kind of become the star. So, and the guys up front are just, you know, really solid. And maybe not any stars among that group, but they're all assignment sound and really good players. So, I don't know. I'm reserving judgment on the defense until we see some more quality opponents, but certainly a good start for them too.
Yeah, and when you look around the rest of week one, you look at some of Wisconsin's opponents who are pretty underwhelming. BYU looked just, their offense looked pretty lifeless against LSU. Nebraska barely held on against Arkansas State. Northwestern had trouble with Nevada, I think it was. And that's, those are three games that people were looking at as, you know, possible tricky games coming up here in the next few weeks. If those three teams aren't trouble for Wisconsin, it's hard to imagine them not starting at least, 8-0, 9-0 before they get to the, Iowa-Michigan games later in the season. I guess I haven't got really your thoughts on, what you think this team will do this year as far as record-wise. But, yeah, that's why I've kind of been asking everyone on the podcast the last month or so. There's a lot of 11-1s out there. I think Zach Heilprin went 12-0.
Really?
Hey, yeah, he's usually a glass half empty type of guy, I feel like. But
that's what I am. Like, I feel like, and probably too much, is that I kind of been thinking 10-2 for some reason, and I don't know where those losses will come. I mean, Michigan, I guess, stands out as being the most obvious potential for a loss, and then I kind of looked at the trips to BYU, Nebraska, Minnesota as being potential losses, and like even the Northwestern home game. I just based that on, I look at everything that could go wrong. Offensive line, still not completely 100% sold on this offensive line. They need, it would be nice to see them get back to the days where they could really, you could really count on them being able to run the ball consistently, and maybe that will come this season finally. Hornibrook, I think, again, I described him as solid, but you'd like to see him take the next step. Defensively, I think losing all those guys, losing Cicci, hurts, and so there's the potential for, you know, hiccups there. But there's a lot to like about this team. I can see why they like this team. There's a lot of young talent, and the special teams, you know, the special teams looks good, and you got to, the other thing you have to watch is Gagliano. Can he stay healthy? It would be a huge loss if he can't stay healthy. So, I don't know. I still think 10-2, and yet I'm talking myself into 11-1, and I don't know, 12-0 used to be. It's so hard to imagine this team, because I think they are going to have a pretty slim margin of error in some regards, running the table. It's hard for me to picture that happening, but who knows?
Yeah, the thing about this season when I look at it is, when you look at each individual game, you probably would favor Wisconsin in every single one. But there are so many games that are losable games.
Right.
Like you mentioned, like BYU, Northwestern, Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, you know, maybe Minnesota's tough.
Yeah.
But then the game at Indiana, I mean, they gave Ohio State a run for their money for two and a half quarters.
Right.
Wisconsin has to go to Indiana.
Yeah.
Right before they play Iowa and Michigan. So there's just a lot of games where they could slip up, and it's really hard to put together 12 wins in a row.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, and you look at Alabama's been, you know, one of the, you know, I'm sure the best program over the last decade, and they've only had one undefeated season during that whole time, and it's really hard to put together those 12 wins, and I think there's going to be at least one loss at some point, and you know, I think 10-2 wouldn't surprise me either, but I think it really comes down to just winning the West. I mean, I think if they don't win the West, it's a huge disappointment.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
And if they're able to win the West, whether that means they're 12-0 when they do it or they're 10-2, I think that's kind of what you need to expect this team to do. And I would definitely make them an underdog in the against Ohio State or even Penn State
right
now.
Which is why I don't buy the playoff talk. You know, like I've seen a couple of people have them in. Like Desmond Howard was one of the guys that had them play. I still think there's whoever comes out of the East, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, is still a step above Wisconsin right now. And so, you know, you'd have to go 12-0 and then win that game. Still, I don't know. I'm not buying it that this is. I like the direction of this program since Paul Chryst took over. I just don't think they're playoff ready yet, but. Perhaps they'll prove me wrong.
I think it's pretty unlikely. I think what you want to do is just get to that game with a chance. And if you're 11-1 going to that game, I think a win gets you in. I mean, I know they don't have the toughest schedule, but if you're 12-1 and you're Big Ten champions, in this current format, you're probably going to get in the playoffs. So I think that's really what you want to do is, you know, even if you have one loss along the way, get in that game, and then give yourself a chance. And you know. Strange things can happen. Upsets happen, and they nearly beat Penn State
should've
last year. They were up a lot and let us slip away. So I definitely don't think they're I ranked them ninth. I don't think they're favorites to make the playoffs, and I don't think they will. But I think they have a chance to get in a position to. Like Paul Chryst says, give yourself a chance to have a chance.
Right.
Is that what he says?
Yeah, I think so. A Chrystism.
Yeah. So, are the Chrystisms better or the Gary Anderson sayings?
It's just two different type of isms. Brett Bielema isms might have.
I don't know anything about those.
So yeah, those were probably the best if I had to rank them. I think Bielema isms one. I think Chrystism's two and Andersonism's three right now. Gary Anderson and Paul Chryst are just such different guys and coaches in general. I mean, you can sit there and these guys talk so much in press conferences and TV interviews and stuff that it's, you know, making fun of them is probably just not a cool thing to do. But, I think Paul Chryst would probably actually get a kick out of people making fun of his, the way he words things. I think he'd appreciate it. In the words of Paul Chryst, he appreciates everything.
Well, thanks for joining me, Jim. I like the care factor you brought to the podcast today. We now welcome the speedy Joe Ferguson to the podcast to return an interception 99 yards for a touchdown against Utah State. Joe, how are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Still getting over the win, getting ready for next week, but I'm good.
Still tired from that?
Yeah, it took its full 24 hours to feel right again, but I'm good now.
What was kind of going through your head when you caught the ball and you started running? Did you think there was any chance you were going to make it there?
Well, as soon as I caught it, I caught it on the run, so I was already had some speed, and you need to catch it on the run if you want to score. But as soon as I got like 10 to 20 yards, my cardio started catching up to me. They had a real long drive, so I was already pretty tired. And then once I made it a little bit, I was like, oh man, like maybe I should pitch this ball. I'm for sure about to get tackled. Like what's about to happen? And all around me, I just felt like guys on my team were just blocking and knocking everybody out around me, and there was just a clear path. And about the 30-yard line towards the end zone, I was like, oh my gosh, no one's around me anymore. I'm gonna score. And that was just crazy. I mean, a ton of emotions, a ton of thoughts go through your mind when you're running, but the one thing that I just focused on was just give it your all. So, yeah.
Did you almost just hand it to Chris so he could finish it?
I should have, but then he would get the touchdown as a stat, so it's a good thing I didn't.
So, I guess you're playing a little bit bigger role this year than in the past. I mean, you've definitely come in on, I know, a lot of short yardage situations in years past, and now you're the second team guy at behind Dakota. What do you feel a lot more, I guess a lot more prepared and comfortable, and being, I guess, you're a senior now?
Yeah, it feels like I've had just about every role that you could have on a team in my 5 years here, and now I'm contributing a little bit more. It's just kind of everything's coming together at the right time. It's like all my hard work's finally starting to catch up, and it's starting to kind of show up out there on the field. So, it's just I'm happy that this is how it's working out, and I'm contributing more now.
Did you always have the belief that, you would eventually, become, part of more of a rotation, I guess, like this?
Yeah. I think since my freshman year, I know I had the talent. It was just my body wasn't in the right spot after a bunch of injuries, and my diet wasn't on point, and I just wasn't all there mentally. But I knew all along, I knew what I was capable of, and I still think that I haven't shown everything that I have yet, but I think that's the attitude you have to have. If you set limits on yourself, then you're never gonna do anything great. So that's just the mentality I've had, and it's a struggle to keep that mentality through adversity. But you got to do it, and that's kind of the approach I've taken.
What kind of injuries were you dealing with earlier in your career that were hard to overcome?
Well, my freshman year, I played half a season with a torn labrum, and I ended up getting that repaired. And that just kind of set me back. I ended up moving positions because of it. Put on like a bunch of weight to play linebacker, and then finally got moved back to safety eventually. But still, wasn't feeling it right. Wasn't getting a ton of reps. And like when Coach Leonard got here, I kind of just was like a sponge to everything he said, and I trusted it, and everything he said ended up being true and working out. And I'm glad that I trusted him and the things that he teaches.
Was there, looking back now, is it a little bit of regret that you played with that injury, or?
No, I don't think so. It was it happened the first day of fall camp,
oh, really?
My freshman year, and I earned a spot on the travel team, and I wouldn't really trade it for anything. Plus, going forward, I mean. I think the adversity I've been through, and I'm sure a million other guys can say this, but I think the adversity I've gone through has just like shaped me as a person. I really wouldn't trade it for anything. Like, obviously my career hasn't gone perfectly or the way I would have dreamt it, but it's just like, I think at the end of the day, this experience is going to help me more than it's going to hurt me in life.
Is there ever a moment where, when you switched to linebacker and it wasn't really working out, that you thought about maybe giving this up or transferring or anything like that?
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I always knew I had talent, and deep down I knew I wasn't playing at my potential, and I kind of just wanted to stick it out. And honestly, like last year, around at the end of fall camp, I don't even think I was on the depth chart, and I was kind of like thinking, man, like they're probably just gonna ask me not to take my fifth year. And I was like, so assuming this is my last year, like I better just go out and have as much fun as I can playing football. Like treat it like it's the backyard. And the day I decided to do that, I just started playing a ton better. And it ended up, I just kept stacking days on days and weeks on weeks and months, and that turned into a good spring, and it turned into a good camp. And it's just the approach I've taken, and it really worked out, and it was a really good lesson for me to learn.
I think everybody knows by now that you're the grandson of Barry Alvarez. Did he give you any advice, you know, as you were kind of going through that?
Yeah, I mean, just him and everybody, like, they tell you, man, just, like, just keep working, just keep working. And when you hear that, you're kind of just like, yeah, like, whatever. Like, you can say that to anybody, just keep working. But the great ones are the ones that, through adversity, they keep working. And it's, like, it's such a cliche, but if you actually do it, and even no matter what happens, like, you could have a million obstacles in your way, but after each obstacle, you just, you keep grinding, keep working hard. Like, eventually it works out, and you have to believe that. If you ever have any doubt in your mind, then it's just not going to work, and that's when guys give up. So you kind of just have to not trick yourself, but you have to be so strong mentally to just not care about whatever happens to you. Like, only you personally can shape what happens to you. It's not outside circumstances, and you really have to believe that.
What's it like playing here when Barry Alvarez is your grandfather?
It's cool. A lot of people ask me that, but it's not what you would think. He's not always, like, over my shoulder, always trying to coach me, or always trying to get in my business. He's there if I need it, just like any other player, but it's cool, because if I ever need him for anything, he's there, and he's always just a walk away, just go talk to him, so it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks for joining me, Joe, yeah. And good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, Jason.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thanks to Jim and Joe for coming on. You can follow Jim at Jim Polzine, WSJ, and follow me on Twitter at Jason_Galloway. Please subscribe to The Red Zone on iTunes if you haven't already, and keep visiting Madison.com for all of our Badgers football covers throughout the season. Thanks for listening.